In a world where businesses strive to stand out and make an impact, there's a fundamental truth we can't ignore. The customer is at the core of it all. Welcome to Customer Centricity.
Welcome to our very first, it's not the first P&D podcast episode, but the first one focusing on customer centricity. And you have been handpicked because of your expertise and the work that you've been doing in this area already. So, you know, and it's really to help all of our virtuosos, I would say, to get a clearer understanding of what customer centricity means to us in the business. Because I think, well, it'd be great to get your thoughts on this, but I think a lot of people have that understanding. Some others are still not clear necessarily. And it may mean slightly different things to different people depending on their role and function.
Okay.
But before we get into the questions, I would like to just give you a chance to introduce yourselves. I think everyone in North America definitely knows who you are, but it will also be, you know, our global colleagues. So if you could introduce yourselves and what you're famous for in Pelham.
Yeah, I'm Matt Dunham, Senior Vice President of Delivery and Strategy at Lorien Global. I've been with the company for just over 19 years, done a handful of things, started off as a recruiter and kind of worked my way into this lofty role with a fancy title. But I've also spent a handful of my years working, running a program for Guidant at United Airlines. And I do a lot of work with Guidant and partnership with them and their programs and how Lorien can deliver to them, not just Lorien, but the STEM brands in general. And I think for the most part, what I do on a daily basis is just kind of figure out what problems we have and try and solve them together with people like Chris. So
yes,
that's me.
I love that. And that's one of the things that I've enjoyed the most about in Pelham, you know, like any company. Things aren't perfect, but everybody's got that mindset to solve problems together, which is brilliant.
Yeah.
Thank you, Matt. Kim, would you like to go next?
Sure. I am Kim Robbins, and I'm a marketing business partner, and my focus is on the candidate. And you asked us to say something that we're famous for, and I don't have the 19 years of experience at Impelham like Matt does, which makes him just famous just in theory, right? But I think the thing that where my voice is heard the most is in Unity on I Am Women, where I do Women in the News. So I'd like to think hopefully that's making a positive impact within the organization.
Absolutely, it is.
I'm Chris McKinney, and I'm the Vice President of Specialist Market. So I spent 7 years in the UK running teams in London, Birmingham and Dublin. And I moved to the US in 2018, where I was running the West Coast. And my role at Impelham is really to help our new customer acquisition. So very customer centric and leveraging specialist markets that really add value to customers' supplier lists and use them as a Trojan horse to open doors. And then we can offer more lines of service. So I work very closely with Matt and Kim and Esther.
Esther, last but not least.
I'm Esther Swati, Senior Director of Strategy for One Impelham and Impelham North America. I am a neo-generalist and futurist, I would say, focused on enterprise strategy and organizational resilience. So my career has spanned a variety of industries and job functions. I've worked in radio stations and I've worked for large tech companies, as well as hospitals and for a fashion stylist. So I've been in a variety of different areas and I love that because it helps me see other people's roles and the art of the possible for them.
Okay, brilliant. And then, you know, this is a panel style interview, so I'm not just going to direct one question at each person. I'd like everyone to, you know, chime in. So the first question is, what does customer centricity mean to you?
I mean, I think I'll just chime in a little bit. I do think it's really, you know, at the end of the day, regardless of your function within the company, I think that we should all be geared towards creating an excellent experience for the customer and really keeping their needs at the center of our, radar. But it's so long, but I think it's also aligning ourselves with customers that share our values and want to do business in a similar fashion. But I think, like I said, it really is, regardless of what you do here, that's as long as we're doing that, we can work backwards from there and we can work out roles. And I think that you heard really a lot of our jobs, we do, all four of us do a bunch of different things. And sure, yeah, we've got a job title in a specific category. Esther's really spent 2 years kind of defining a role that we think that she's now going to be in. But it's, and you know, it really, we all do whatever's necessary. And we do that because we're trying to create that great experience for the customer, because then they'll want to do business with us. And so rarely do you come across somebody here that says, yeah, that's not my job description, I don't do that. Right.
True.
We do what we have to do. So I don't know. That's just a kind of a broad sense of what I think it means.
I think it's bringing value to every interaction. And for us also at Impellum, it's recognizing our customers are internal and external. So our coworkers and colleagues are depending on us to make valuable experiences and feed them value that can go customer facing as well. So while our roles may not always be customer facing, so to speak, each of us can impact the value we bring to a customer as an organization.
So I just want to jump in and, you know, when I moved from being more of a, you know, a STEM brand marketing person to the B2C world, you know, our candidates are our customers, our contractors are our customers. And oftentimes we need to be reminded of that. And I love this new role for me, even though I've been in it a year, but getting Bullhorn up and running and creating some basics for everybody to be able to manage and measure, and then really looking at the candidate experience or contractor experience and making sure that they are in a place where someday they could be hiring managers, right? So we really, I love the external, internal customers, because if we think of that all the time, that everybody we are touching, we are doing business with in one shape or form.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Good stuff, Chris.
Yeah, I was always brought up on the phrase, take care of your customers and they take care of you. And I think what's really hard in business is you have data-driven decisions, behavioral-driven decisions, and often profit-driven decisions. And it's important to keep your customers the North Star of, like, that should be the primary reason that you're making that decision. And then the other part should come as a byproduct of, yeah, it makes us more profit, but it helped the customer first. And that's really, really what this is all about.
That's really good. I've heard it said that we shouldn't be data-driven organizations. We should be data-informed, which I think brings that balance you're talking about.
Yeah.
Right, because actually sometimes the data can send you in the wrong direction if you don't understand your customer.
Exactly. And I think that highlights also that we've got to be checking with our people on the front lines who are closest to the customer to augment the data that is coming from the machines with the human data that sometimes isn't always as tangible for us.
It's making sure they have what they need. And I think that we're constantly, and we're growing as an organization, and we're learning every day what we need to do differently, potentially, or more of sometimes, right? And where we have are some people on the front lines that are, maybe their process we need process improvement or whatever it might be. We constantly need to support them because they do know their customers, and they know, and customers, and like you mentioned, that was a strong point about the internal element of it as well. You think about the fact that we're, you know, fortunate enough to be going on the performance trip. Well, I treat that like that's a sales event for me, mm-hmm. right? And because it's investing in your colleagues, and we become a stronger organization for it. It helps with people's career development, but it also helps us be stronger for our customers, and there's a lot of byproducts that come from that.
That's really good. I think that's tied to like being relational versus transactional. I think that's something that when I observe Ryan and Matt and Chris, it's not just about what they can extract, but it's a long-term relationship that we're building with coworkers and customers. So even if right now isn't the opportunity to provide value, there will be opportunity in the future. And so staying connected with our people is key.
I was just going to do a shout out to P&D because I think over the last few months, the How to Hustles and the leaders who take those calls to the next level and learning from one another, I am always really disappointed when I can't make one because I learn not one, not two, three, four strategic ways in which marketing can support the delivery and sales organizations. We may not always be able to implement them very quickly, but that understanding, and when we talk about, you know, integrated sales and hearing from each of the brands, I think that's critical to our growth as an organization, that people from Lorien and people from Bartek and people from SRG who have similar roles are in the same room, even if that room is virtual. Oh gosh,
absolutely. And to your point about, you know, understanding your customer, when you do attend those sessions, Kim, you're right there with your customers, which is fantastic. I love How to Hustle so much. And thanks for the shout out. I'm pleased that P&D have been able to support it. But what's actually quite inspirational is it's really led, isn't it, by the subject matter experts and the leaders in brand. So yeah, we can help, you know, with preparation and scheduling and measuring the impact. But the actual sessions themselves, the reason they land so well is that they're led by people that everybody knows, you know, they're famous, like Justin, you know, everyone wants to come and hear what he has to say. And many, many other SMEs that we're working with. So yeah.
Well, you see, that is customer centricity when the whole business is working together to help the customer. So it's not just the frontline salespeople. P&D are also solving problems for those customers, and marketing are on those calls, and the strategy team, and they're all listening to the same customer problems, but have different views and ideas and perspectives about how they can actually solve them. So you've really put the customer at the center there, and that's why I think that they work so well.
Yeah. I agree. I will tag on to that. I think that one key thing there too is you all are agile to the macro and micro market conditions. So I think that is key to enterprise organizations to retain their flexibility to what do your customers need right now, regardless of the plan that you had for P&D or for sales. We have to be able to pivot. We learned that with COVID and with a lot of what's happening right now with the economy. And the second thing I would add there is that bringing the best to a customer isn't always in your individual toolkit, and it's not a weakness to leverage your network. And I think that's where Impellum has grown light years over the last year, just seeing how closely, just even those of us on this call get to work together and get to leverage each other's strengths to serve the client is awesome.
Definitely. So in terms of, we've had some great examples there of how we're trying to currently understand our customer needs and expectations. But what are some other examples of what we're doing or what we'd like to do more of in the future?
Yeah, I mean, I think we definitely have room to grow in this department. I think and we're kind of at the beginning of a new, I'll call it era, with you know, some structural changes and with North America kind of being united under Claire Marsh. And because I think there's been a bit of a silo, you know, or barrier between GMS and STEM, and in, you know, even that even relates to marketing, where there's marketing and, you know, and so I think that what I've seen a lot of over the course of time is we figure out how to make every job function matter or remain intact, and then come up with the solution for the customer. And I think it comes down to, like Julia says, stop the stupid, right? Like, what makes sense for the customer? Now let's work backwards from there. And yeah. I think that's we're now going at the onset of that sort of decision making, where we haven't necessarily done as much of that previously, and it's really driving towards that customer centric mindset.
What we're currently doing to really make sure we understand our customers, whether they're internal or external.
Yeah. Oh, and I think I've got a great example of it. And it's something, so it was about a year and a half ago, I got a phone call from Farron Congress, who's, as you guys all know, one of our absolute superstar sales reps. she was breaking into Southwest Airlines, and she had heard a story of what I had accomplished at United Airlines several years ago, and she wanted to know what she needed to do to get to that level. And I just said, you know, what I did was I made their business my business. And I understood what their challenges were, what their headwinds were, what their competitors were doing, and how they measured success. And I learned it up and down, and I became part of the company effectively in some levels, right? And so you look at what she's done in such a short time at Southwest Airlines, and she has done the same thing. She's incredibly embedded into that account. She knows the people on a personal level because she's amongst them as much as possible. And we do everything we can to support her and what she's doing. And we've created new solutions that we had not previously done. And this is, I mean, kudos to Chris on a lot of that work, but on the SOW side, and it's new solutions, and it's partnering with them and tuning into the customer, what's going to make us sticky there and have a long-term partnership. And, you know, we listen to them and we're doing that for them. And the return is remarkable, frankly. And I think that that's not going to go away anytime soon, because we are going to continue to have that mindset. That's not going anywhere.
But Matt, what's interesting about that example is she's working quite uniquely there. I mean, she has a Southwest email address, and she's in their Teams channels, and she's one of the family and goes to the events. But she's taken the concept of customer centricity and put her own spin on it and applied it in her own way. And I think that's what's really important here is customer centricity can mean a lot of different things to a lot of different people, and there's no black and white definition. But that's a great example of, you know, the business empowering somebody to go take that idea, go work with their internal network and resources to go tailor their service to that customer in the best way they think possible. And they're probably the best examples we've seen. You could say Mike Gilday and what he does.
Oh yeah.
You know, they're all over the business, and I'm sure Esther's got some good examples that she's gonna share now.
Yeah. I was thinking about this. I think the organizational alignment that Matt was speaking to is key. So something that has started to happen over the last year is we've launched industry tiger teams. So now we have our enterprise new and existing sales leaders meeting together around industries in order to bubble up trends. And we're also feeding them market intelligence to take to their customers. So they're learning from each other. They're learning from the strengths of each of their customers, and also seeing where we can provide solutions for gaps that our customers have. And I think that is bringing a level of synergy around industries that is huge. And so I expect in the next year, we're going to see more market research coming out with Lucas Rosner and the market rate analysis team, as well as the work that my team does around market intelligence and the customer office as well. So I think we're bringing our insights together, and the thing Julia talked about on the Virtuoso Alliance is our listening framework. So we're really activating that from the front lines and every level to better understand our customers and provide solutions that serve them.
Yeah, and I think you know, I've always said this is that we are a, you know, here in North America, we're a mid-sized player in the industry. But we're backed by, you know, kind of a giant in the industry, and we truly are, and that's been true on some levels. But I think we are now finally starting to tap into the Impellum engine, right? Kind of what Esther said, and I think it's you know, something that will only grow stronger. But it's a word that Esther had used before too, because we are a bit of a mid-sized player. We're also a lot more agile, and we don't have these out of the box solutions. And even we have some new people that have started, and Mike Johnson's on solution sales, and we can build anything. We really can build anything. And we don't go to our customers and tell them how they do business with us. We want to hear how to do business with them, and we can do that. And we have the ability to do that, and those abilities will just continue to grow stronger the more that we work with the Impellum, like I said, engine that makes us capable.
So, So we're kind of entering this new strategic phase as a company, but I think what Matt speaks to is pivotal, and it's something that's in a book I was reading right now, which Kim has also, Unreasonable Hospitality, and it's finding the balance between control and creativity. We're at a tipping point where we have operated as mid-size, sometimes startup and agile, and we're moving more into enterprise customers, but it'll be crucial for us to not just be process bound or driven, but continue to keep that autonomy and empowerment of our employees to bring the best value. And that's not an easy thing to do. We've seen over the last year that Microsoft, Google, and other companies have been making layoffs in order to drive productivity. So it's very easy to get bureaucratic, to get all the red tape, and we don't want it to be that way for our employees. We want to make it easy for them to do the right thing for the customer. So we have to eliminate anything that is causing friction for them, whether it be process improvement or policy improvement. Those are things I think the leadership is paying close attention to right now.
That's brilliant. And it makes me think of Challenger, which, as you know, will, Esther, you know, it will make me very happy, because a big part of the research they did before the book was around, it's not just our salespeople's capabilities and skill level, it's organizational capability. Mm-hmm. So they're not on their own. It's not just about them having the right skill set, it's about us helping them, giving them the resources and the insights and all the things you've been talking about to make that customer journey easy, because being easy to buy from is really very high up on the agenda for loyalty. Kim, I just wanted to bring you in, because with your sort of B2C role, what are some of the steps or the things that we're doing for our candidate to really understand their needs?
Before we got on this call, I just did a minute of research about what the top stressors in our lives are. And out of the 15, four of those are losing your job, finding a job, starting a job, and retiring. So when you think of the candidate and the candidate journey and what we can do to improve that experience of something that is just fundamentally not a comfortable place, I think we have a lot of power to do real good in the world. You know, we've spent a lot of this time talking about customer centricity, but with the candidate kind of also at the center of that, it's really something we can all be proud of, right? So that goes to the internal customer. And thinking, you know, we've put a good person in a good job is really what makes the difference. Mm-hmm. So in the coming months, we are starting a new pillar process, looking at, we're dreaming, what does that customer experience look like? Where are there some gaps? What are we doing really, really well in certain brands? And maybe we can improve upon in other brands. So that when you work with any brand within the Impellum portfolio, the experience is very similar. So, you know, that is going to be, I think, some place where we're all going to see a lot of true change and excitement. But I also want to say, you know, when I was listening to everybody talk about the last question, you know, people do business with people. And the group of people within Impellum, I mean, there is nobody that I don't love working with. Because I really feel like everybody's best interest is right there. Like, we are going to listen and we are going to try to problem solve and we are going to partner to make sure that we come to the best conclusion we can at that moment. But being nimble and agile and being able to pivot for each other, for our candidates, for our customers, makes working here just a joy.
I totally agree. Echo that 100%. So, of course, we know that there's a role that technology plays in helping us to enhance this customer experience. And we had Bullhorn rolled out last year. So I just wanted to get some of your thoughts around how we think Bullhorn is going to help us with this focus on customer centricity.
I steal Esther's line. I think data informed has to be the approach, where I think what Bullhorn's really good at is it gives visibility of our business that we never had before. And what's really hard, I think both for an individual contributor or a manager or somebody collaborating is to be able to see what the other person is seeing. And the data has been fantastic. Like already in January, we can see what customers we're meeting, what types of jobs we're generating, our time to fill. So now we can be informed with good data to look at where can we improve the customer experience, which we didn't really have before. But the caveat being it's only as good as the data we put in the system. So I still think there's a way we need to go in terms of not only adoption, but just making sure that the data is valuable and tied to what we're trying to the customer's goals, right? Because sometimes you can really focus on the wrong things that don't really move the needle. What are the true measures of success that are going to help the customer? And then how does that translate into Bullhorn and then the activities we're driving on a day-to-day basis?
Yeah. Yeah, it's like going back to Matt's point about almost like starting with the end in mind. Mm-hmm. What is important to the customer? And then going back from there. And it really, I mean, I'm going to age myself, but when I started as a recruiter, and I was given my KPIs, my metrics. And I don't know if it's a generational thing, but I didn't question them. I was like, yeah, okay, I'll hit those. I've always been a bit of a fan of KPIs, which I know is odd. I didn't think for 1 minute, like, why am I doing this? I just thought, well, I've been told to do it, so I'm going to do it. But now I think our people really want to know, don't they? Well, what's the outcome we're looking for from these activities? So it's not just let's track leads. How are we going to convert those leads and what does that mean for us right. As a business?
And I think sometimes we lose sight of KPI means key performance indicator. It's just an indicator. It's a,
yeah.
You know, it's a signpost to say you're on the right track, but there's different ways to do business. There's a lot of context that goes behind them. So for us, you know, customer meetings is a great indicator engaging with customers. But if they're not the right customers or the right meetings or the right mm-hmm. people, the KPI is useless. So it really is, like you said, it's got to be data informed. It's got to be the right data.
Yeah, and I'll kind of bring up Kim's side here too on candidate, because Kim, you're an awesome candidate representative. I think something else that, I mean, we are very privileged to have a new IT partner in North America with Ronak. And I think something he's talked about a lot is getting our data cleaned up and modernizing so then we can add on automation and AI. And I think where that's going to be pivotal to our candidates is we're going to be able to track emerging skills. We're going to be able to see where our candidates' careers could pivot in the future. A lot of our customers are wanting to know how to upskill, reskill, preskill their people. And the more we have that data, the more we'll be able to provide insights to our candidates for, hey, here's an amazing future career path for you, as well as for our customers. Here's how you can pivot people in this role into a new role. Here's how you can drive productivity with AI and automation. But all of that starts with our own data. So I think it ties back to what Chris said, you know, our data has to be really good. We have to be mm-hmm. looking at it. We've got to be inspecting what we expect. And really, this is a beginning. We're going to continue to build on it and extract more insights.
Such early stages, right? I mean, adoption is really way, it's too much of my focus, frankly. I'd really like to get away from Bullhorn adoption, but it's so important that I can't, right? And because it's just, we're at the beginning. We're so far away from being able to utilize the automation and AI that you know, that Ronak's talking about, that plugs in directly into Bullhorn. But we need to get there quickly because our competition is already there. We need to be able to cover more ground. We need to be able to get our brand out there, more touch points with our customers and our candidates that comes directly from that data. And it's you know, it will allow us ultimately to be much better recognized in the marketplace and you know, see what we're doing with our customers, which customers we want to do more work with, where we should invest our resources, where we should pull some away. Yeah, I can say that that's what Bullhorn will do for us, but we're, you know, not there yet. For us to honestly compete in today's market, it's 100% necessary. It's incredible that we were able to have the success that we've had over the last, well, decade plus of you know, hitting our financial targets and really doing it through the use of spreadsheets and Smartsheet and all sorts of different homemade tools. So it takes some getting used to. It's a different behavior. So it's a new muscle people are working out here. So, but looks good so far, so good.
Yeah. We've been scrappy, and that's where I think everyone contributing their data contributes to the whole. Each individual plays a pivotal role in Bullhorn adoption and what we can use it for in the future. Those spreadsheets used to reside who knows where, who knows who had visibility. And so now, like, everyone contributing to one central system will allow us to move faster, and it'll allow our sales teams to see clearer how to serve the customer.
The customer and the candidate life cycle, and maybe we'll call it the flywheel. The flywheel is so critical for all of us, depending on what function you have, because we do need to measure, because if it's not measured, we can't manage it. Because we just simply didn't know. When did a customer come in? How did a customer come in? How did they learn about us? What are they interested in? And so now, as we get this information, we're going to be able to better in marketing, create content that resonates with both our candidate and our customer base, and become true thought leaders and that branding. So that is all part of customer centricity, is being, you know, for somebody to lean into us from a less what Esther was talking about, where we're giving them some trend information. This is really on that very marketing global view, where we're engaging, we're bringing them in. Because if we look at the number of candidates and customers that are in Bullhorn before we clean up the data, it's mind-boggling. And we know that realistically, with all the members of the sales and delivery teams, only a certain percentage of them can get touched. So that becomes a marketing function. We want to make sure that people do feel like we're hearing their voices, and that we're giving them information that when they're ready to buy, when they're ready to look for a job, we already have them in our database, in our network, and they are willing to do business with us.
Yeah, it's a good foundation, isn't it? So Kim, you were talking about sort of measuring impact, measuring success. What are some of the ways that we can measure how successful we're being, or our progress with customer centricity as a focus?
I think the biggest thing is listening and communicating with one another. Because, again, if we just look at Bullhorn stats, we're not going to really have a great understanding as to why somebody may just fall off our radar. But if, as we start to track better customer interactions, we may know that we lost business because of X. That could be pricing, because we didn't have the right program, because of, you know, it was my buddy that I had a beer with at the bar. Whatever the case may be, we'll have a little bit more insight. And that allows us to then flex to what the customer is really looking at from a measurement standpoint. So, you know, in my past life, when I've, you know, been in marketing organizations where we have had this platform in place, we really do look at every interaction to figure out what we do more of and what we do less of. So that top of funnel, that beginning of the flywheel from marketing, we then can start to understand how many people do we really need to touch in order to help sales be more successful, for leads to be warmer, for candidates to be more engaged. Making people, you know, just it's scalable, right? That's the whole idea, is just to make business more scalable.
Robin, our chief of sales, said yesterday that GMS, our global managed services side of the house, which is Bar Pelham and Guidant Global, they know that their enterprise sales team needs to have 60 qualified calls that will lead to 15 RFPs shortlisted, and then 10 finalist meetings and 2 wins. That's the kind of data we're looking to extract so that as Matt said earlier, we can put our most valuable resources against our customers. I think marketing, being able to nurture customers and clients, means that our people can focus on that customer service, that deeper value and relationship, and the kind of standard streamlined communications can be handled automatically. And so they don't have to keep that in their brain. They can worry, how can I bring the best of Impellum? How can I top level service to this customer? How can I provide them value they would have never expected? Because they're going to have more time. Right now, we have a lot of people doing a lot of manual tasks, and the goal is to increase their productivity. But it's not just manual productivity, it's not just tasks. It's all about time for strategic thinking and bringing more value to their customers.
Yeah, absolutely. Any other, I'm big into measuring because I really want to be able to measure P&D's impact this year. And it's tricky, but I want to up my blue from the Colour Insights. So I'm taking every opportunity to learn more about data. But Chris, Matt, is there anything else that you can think of that we're going to be measuring which will help us to understand how we're progressing with our customer-centric focus?
I think at the moment we still rely on anecdotal feedback rather than a formal system. So I believe we're going to bring in Net Promoter Score, some kind of feedback capturing tool, which would be hugely valuable. And both the positive feedback we want to hear, but also the passive and the negative, because really they're the obviously the negative feedback is stuff that you can really impact quickly to improve your service, but it's actually the passive customers that are almost impartial about your service that you have the biggest risk of losing, but could have the biggest upside if you just listen to them and figured out, you know, where you can make those improvements. So yeah. I think that's going to be hugely valuable. And again, it will provide the data to help tailor our service and the things we do. And then the other thing we're looking at is just how we reward people and recognize success. So, you know, a lot of us work in sales where you use commission as a monetary value of how good you are at your job, which doesn't necessarily mean it's the best customer service. It just means you generated the most profit. And I think that's something that is hot on the topic of the UK, and it's always a delicate topic, but how do you tie customer centricity to reward and recognition, and how do you do that across the board fairly and drive the right behaviors? So in terms of measures, are we just measuring profit, or are you actually measuring customer service?
Yeah, absolutely. And that so those conversations, from what you're saying, Chris, you know, they're already happening between UK, North America.
I know it's hot on Julia's from the Virtuoso Alliance. It's one of her top three topics, and it, which is nothing new. I think anybody who's worked in staffing knows for years this has been a challenge of how do you reward fairly? How do you drive the right behaviours? How do you balance the company's interests with the customer's interests and measure that appropriately? So
truly gauging somebody's value. Right. On this point. And it goes beyond, because there's a lot of times it's timing and circumstance that benefit people for sure. And they don't all build their book of business in the same way. And there's people that aren't building books of business that are maybe impacting the customer at a higher level too. So that's certainly, I think we've been flying blind a little bit, but the data will help us understand what people's impact is across the board. So another example I was thinking about too, just as far as like Chris talked about getting customer surveys and things of that nature, through our efforts on the working with Guidant, or GMS, I should say, and standing up these integrated talent solutions where people from STEM brands are added on to a GMS team. For instance, at one of our customers at Navistar, we leaned on the customer office to go get a voice of the customer and kind of get some feedback from them, what they thought of our program and delivery and capabilities and what they needed. And then we added a resource and we really tuned into them, and the results are dramatic. And I think we're going to continue to do that and take advantage of all of our resources here in the company to drive customer solutions and give them what they need. And it goes back to that point, Chris, it's customers, it's a higher level of customer service. And so what we recognize in the GMS side of the house is their margins are thinner, right? So because it's really just operating off of a fee. So the number of people they can align to a program is limited. So if we can add to that, well, we're just adding now to their ability to go stay in front of the customers. These customers, they want to be followed up with. They want somebody that's going to just talk to them about what they have in their forecast, just how the resources on their team are doing. And they can't get to them sometimes. And so if we can help that, then we're going to be further embedded. We're going to sell. We're going to expand with those customers. We're going to sell more lines of business, more solutions. We have a lot to offer. And I think that's going to be a heavy focus for us moving forward is getting to stand up more of these solutions with some of our bigger customers, particularly with the GMS customers that we have already.
Excellent. I'm glad you mentioned that as another resource, Matt. So is that, you said the voice of the customer. So which, what's the name of that tool or team that are capturing it?
So the customer office is the one who led that effort. It was voice of the customer, so it was done more manually. We also have a tool in-house called Primary Intelligence that allows an outside party to ask our customers questions. We evaluate when losses, when we're going to RFP, et cetera. I think something to highlight here also is what Matt said in regards to how we're serving the customer on the integrated talent solution front. Alex Sallow has met with the CIO with one of our customers, and he has a 3,000 to 4,000 email list of that he is sending newsletters, and he's sending them industry insights and solutions. So I think that's a prime example of where we're working together. And then we've got Mackenzie Rosso also, who is setting up strategic alliance meetings, which were formerly called governance meetings, with the customers. And this allows us to get close to the lines of business to understand what their strategic goals are for the year and how we can support them. So I think our teams are ramping up on all levels and getting closer to the customer, extracting insights and bringing them back to Impellum so we can provide better solutions for our customers.
And it ties into challenger sales, Lizzie, right? So it's being, it's as an organization on the sales front becoming far less reactive, right? And it's, we need to bring solutions to our customers. Not wait for them to ask, because somebody else is probably going to be knocking on the door, bringing something else to them. Right. So I think as long as we can proactively bring these ideas and be innovative and evolve our solutions, and stay ahead of their needs if possible. And you only do that if you're fully tuned in. But, I think, that is a shift in mindset that's now taking place, and you're seeing that.
Yeah, absolutely. Because if I think back to when I was first trained in sales, in staffing, it was all about asking questions to find the pain. So basically, you know, what's keeping you up at night, and then selling back to, you know, this is how we can solve that problem for you. But what Challenger sort of recognized is that perhaps ironically, sometimes the biggest challenges or problems our customers have, they're not even aware of that potential problem or situation or opportunity that they could uncover. And so your point there, Matt, you know, just explains that to a T, really. And that's what our customers want. They want us to truly consult with them and provide value by teaching them something they didn't already know.
Yeah. And they don't want to waste their time informing us about their company, their industry. Yeah. They expect us to come to the table with the value. I think what Challenger Sales has done a really good job of is showed us how to leverage our internal market rate analysis and market intelligence teams to proactively bring information to the customer and then test, is this a pain point? Because we have it as a pain point in X industry. We've seen it trending here. And I'll, of course, highlight here that all Impellum employees have access to Everest Group membership, as well as staffing industry analyst, and that's a way to get insights sent directly to you. I think Everest Group is cutting edge in regards to what's happening in our market. They've shared a lot about how customers right now are changing out their suppliers because they are looking for more value for less cost. And so we need to be ahead of that, not waiting for renewals, extensions, or these strategic customer conversations. We need to take value to every single meeting we have with the customer. And that's a little bit of a change in, I would say, the sales process, because you kind of slowly win them over. But the sooner we can wow them with insights and intelligence that can help their company reach their goals and help the individual have their career goals, the faster we're going to be able to close deals and show our value.
Absolutely. So just to think to, you know, our leaders within the company, we've started our pilot management development program for some of our leaders who haven't had any sort of formal training before, or perhaps they're newer in their role. And part of that will be a module on customer centricity. What do you think is really important for us to include when we're developing our leaders? What are some of the things we can do in P&D and across Impellum to help them develop this mindset and some of these skills?
I'd say as a manager, I typically learn when I make a mistake. So if you could offer different scenarios for them to debate and explore, and the scenarios or the outcomes, some are customer centric, some are more profit driven, some are more individualist, and helping them to recognize the right pathway rather than learning from their mistakes like I've done, that would definitely help them.
Yes, you're so good at that. With a lot of the folks that we've hired that are newer to, not just newer to the industry, but newer to working perhaps, is I think that we need to drive more curiosity. And it's that curiosity about our customers, about our candidates, about the skill sets, the technology, everything that we do, about the industry. And I think it's hard because you have a group of people that are, heck, they're just trying to pay rent, right? And they've got a job, and they're focused on the next thing and the next thing after that, and that they don't look past that. But it's, you do see the individuals that do ramp up dramatically ahead of their peers are the ones that are curious about what we're doing as a company, what's happening around them. And if there's a way to help drive that, and maybe it's just having our leaders, our managers, the folks that you're talking with, is just having that be part of the conversation. It's hard now because we are beating everybody over the head with KPIs and bullhorn and things like that, right? So that's a little bit counters against the what
yeah,
I just,
but you're
we talked
explaining
about,
the
but, yeah.
You're explaining the why. I think you're being hard on yourself there, because all of those how to hustle sessions with bullhorn demos has included this is how it's going to make your life easier as well. Yeah. It's not just you've got to do it because
can't just say do this just because, right? You have to tell people, you have to tell people why they're doing something, and then show them how you do it. And but yeah, I think that's a big focus. But
so these changes, so like Matt was saying, though, is a lot of the people in that management cohort are transitioning from an individual contributor role into a management role where they have to consider the wider impacts on the team and the business. So it's a very different mindset when getting that deal across the line, but actually that candidate maybe is going to have a ripple effect on damaging another customer relationship, and being able to see the wood for the trees.
I really love what you said about learning from making mistakes, and that's a huge part of our culture, isn't it, of psychological safety. And so by offering some scenarios in a training environment, they can make mistakes in a safe space.
I think the follow-up there too, though, because I'm very passionate about this, Lizzie, because role play in a safe environment is one thing, which is good and important. But I think it's very important for our leaders to be inviting managers to the table for customer conversations, for those pivotal times where you can watch your leader and how they interact, how they pivot with a customer objection. The more we can allow that kind of shadowing to happen, the faster our high performers will be able to ramp up. They need to be able to observe our leadership in order to see how did they do it. And that also inspires curiosity around how they can change their own approach. And the more they do it with a variety of different leaders, they're going to see there's different styles. Sales doesn't have to be one style. And sometimes if you have a direct manager, you may only be learning one style. So one thing we've talked about a lot within Lorien and other brands is it's important to build your network outside of your function and the brand that you are in. So you can do that with Coffee Roulette. You can do that with our business resource groups, but be proactive. Don't wait for someone to make introductions. Find someone you're interested in learning more about, and that is such a fast way for you to ramp up.
That is such a rule on S&T
that every customer meeting you should have somebody on it with you because it's a learning point. So that's how.
Yeah, it's been more challenging with more working from home. We've seen that, haven't we?
Yeah.
You know.
It has been though, right? I think actually Zoom and Teams meetings give an opportunity to add someone else to the meeting. And we've made a point of, you know, by doubling up, he's a great example. I have Jason Hastie and Chris McGraw going side by side selling Bartek Energy and IT Perm. Two very different backgrounds, very different styles, even their communication. One's got a Midwest accent, one's got a thick Scottish accent, but so, yeah, like Tessa's point, that's how you learn different ways to help a customer and solve problems and look at things differently.
Yeah, and we've got a lot of people with a lot of experience. I think that's what makes, particularly within Lorien, I'll say, great, is there's a lot of industry experience here and at the leadership level and a lot of people that have been here for a long time. But we're all very willing to, we want to be connected to them. We want to, the more they can see us, interact with the customers and the candidates and show them maybe what good looks like. There's a lot to learn from here. I would say one gap is that, we don't hear people on the phones because we're not always together, but that is a good point with the virtual meetings. You add people on and we do that as much as possible. That's the best way to learn, I think, is shadowing and then ultimately, you know, coming up with your own recipe for success.
Yes. Recipe. Yeah, that's a good way of looking at it.
As I sit here and listen to everybody, the thing that keeps running through my head is beautiful basics. These are, you know, these are not necessarily earth-shattering truths we're talking about. They're really going back and sitting back and saying, looking at yourself, looking at the customer, putting yourselves in the customer's shoes, doing those things that work, learning from people who are doing the right things. And again, the breaking down barriers to have contact with people throughout the organization, building that network has really been excellent to see and learning from one another cross brand. So you're going to hear that from me a lot too, right? Mm-hmm. I'm very cross brand. And the beautiful basics, right? Learn from each other. Take the best of the best and, you know, just replicate and grow.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, I think Matt was saying this earlier. I agree it is the beautiful basics, but it's also we've got some work to do in some areas around mindset. Curiosity is a great example. Growth mindset. I was dead set that I must have a growth mindset. Filled out my mindset module assessment. Apparently I'm mixed. So now I know some of the things I can work on so that I can get more of a growth mindset. We're nearly coming up to time, but I just wanted to end. I mean, it's all been really positive, but perhaps sharing a great and recent story, a case study of where we've seen with a customer this stuff that we're talking about living and breathing across the business. There's probably loads to choose from. So
yeah. I mean, the one that comes to mind for me is really what Mike Gilday and team does for Amazon and just what they've built there. I wish everybody that works here could see it with their own eyes. And it's something over time they've built something that is quite extraordinary as far as the work they put into it, the organization that it takes, and the teamwork. You even have a pair of recruiters that do most of the heavy lifting between Matt Grimes and Dan Van Gemmer, and they split everything. It doesn't matter whoever fills it. They just split everything down the middle. But they've created a process that suits their customer to a T. We have our office in a location that's not convenient for any of them where they live, but it's convenient for the customers because wow. The customers use our office to conduct interviews, and they come in, they need to interview so many people in a certain time frame. We fill those slots, we work them through. We feed people, but it's quite extraordinary, and I'm not doing it justice as to how this whole process is orchestrated and has been built up over time. But it's truly is the essence of customer centricity all the way around 360 because of the efforts that they're positioning their candidates to be successful and delivering the product to their customers that's had them doing this for several years. Oh, and it's a great
example. Yeah. So Matt, do we actually have a case study that people would be able to?
Probably not about their process. We do about our success with Amazon and what we've done with Amazon specifically, but not really around what their operation looks like. And that's probably something we should look at.
Well, we'll get Mike on the next customer centricity podcast, or maybe and his team.
I think that's a great idea. He won't be as dazzling as us four, but yeah, he'll be okay.
Yeah. Well, we've set the standard, haven't we, today? But thank you all so much, Kim, Esther, Matt, Chris. I think your contributions have been amazing, and I've learned a lot, and I'm sure everyone that listens will come away with some insights and things that they can actually go and learn more about, or things they can put into action to help with their customer centricity focus.